Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome.
There's a better world to come and tell you why. There's a better world to come and tell you why. We will feed them on the land, on the sea, and in the sky. There's a better world to come and tell you why. There's a better world to come and don't you see? When we'll all be union and we'll all be free. There's a better world to come and don't you see?
Welcome, friends. Welcome once again to Progressive News Network. I'm your host, News Director Rick Spezak. I want to thank you for joining us on behalf of myself and my co-producer, Ms. Mickey Royce. I want to go over a couple quick stories first before we have our guests. As always, we've got stories on the ongoing Fukushima cover-up. First thing I want to mention is I happened to catch on C-SPAN, and if you go to the show notes page, you'll see the further information, the details. You can check it out on C-SPAN yourself. The American Enterprise Institution, a glad-handing group of the 1%ers, got together and analyzed, live on C-SPAN, or at least on C-SPAN, the current situation of Fukushima. And they had some interesting things to say. First thing, we had a nuclear industry expert, a consultant, say that, this just goes to show you that regulation is a complete failure. What we need to do is get away and rid ourselves of the untidy, useless regulations, because, of course, we know they could do this so much better without regulations. The point he made was that because regulations tend through compromise and the messy process of actually getting something enacted in regulations, they tend to be weak milk. And consequently, since industry, although they know better, they only will do safety procedures up to the regulations quality. They don't do any better, even though they know that without those regulations, they would do their safety so much better. And then we had a former Bush administration official, had some interesting things to say. He had been involved in the oversight of the FEMA Katrina disaster, and he said that the reason that Katrina was such a mass failure, he said, by and large, we blame it on the people of New Orleans. There's so much more untidy, messy, and far less organized than the citizens of Japan, who he lauded because he said, despite the fact that they had a catastrophe inside a catastrophe inside a catastrophe, they all stood in line very neatly. And they stood in neat lines for a long time waiting for government help. And if only the people of New Orleans had done the same thing, things could have been so much better. And he did say that the reason it's a catastrophe inside a catastrophe inside a catastrophe wasn't because it was a complete failure of design, although he mentioned that the site was not the location wasn't just the site of a fault line, it was a site of where four fault lines came together, and it was built on the former location of a military facility, but it was 35 feet higher as a military facility. So what they did was, before they built this nuclear plant, they lowered the site 35 feet. And then below the nuclear plant, below that in subterranean containers, they had the generators. So that when the first catastrophe happened, when the earthquake happened, that knocked down the power lines, they were then relying on the generators. Well, then when the generators flooded, and you can see where that led, and of course the pumps were on a low level also, so the pumps flooded, preventing any cooling in addition to the complete loss of power. So he said no one could estimate, could have expected that, and consequently that would be a real problem. But ladies and gentlemen, we've got our first guest. Let me bring her on. I think we have Ms. Ellis Robinson, chair of Florida's. Welcome. Is this Ellis? Is this Ellis?
Hello?
Oh, hello. It sounds like we have Jose. Jose, welcome.
Yeah, this is Jose. Hi, Richard. How are you?
Oh, pretty good, sir. Pretty good. I want to welcome you tonight. You are doing such a great job getting the information out for the One Miami. Tell us, what's going on now?
Well, right now we're involved in a couple things. We're, you know, part of a much larger national movement called the 99% Spring, where we're hitting the streets and we're taking a, you know, 99% pledge card out there, and we're going door to door and we're asking people, if you stand with a 99% and you're tired of having elected officials and politicians that, you know, cut taxes for businesses and the rich, cut the services and programs that we need now more than ever because of the economy and the lack of job, you know, the lack of good jobs, and also reminding them that we need, you know, that we need politicians in there that are going to fight for creating good jobs, right? So right now we're in the middle of that. We're in the middle of taking the fight to the banks as well. A few weeks ago we were involved in a live-in where we moved into a Wells Fargo lobby, and it was some members from One Miami as well as Occupy Miami, and you know, it was more of a symbol, and people can find that video on our site on YouTube. You know, and it's kind of funny and all that kind of stuff, but at the end of the day, people have lost their homes. These banks are still playing with money like it's, you know, growing on trees, and the ones left responsible for it, you know, is all of us. And so so we're taking that fight to the banks as well. You know, we have our hands in a lot of different pots, but you know, we're starting to, you know, really focus in on some solid local issues as well. So it's going to be a busy summer.
You know, I saw your essay on Dr. King when you quoted him as saying, "Oh, America, how often you've taken necessities from the masses to give luxuries to the classes. God never intended for one group of people to live in superfluous, inordinate wealth while others live in abject, deadening poverty." That was an eloquent quote of his, and I think you were making an important point that part of the great Dr. King's battle and his message wasn't just about equality, it was also about the economic struggle as well. Could you address that for a moment?
Well, you know, I don't think that – so there's this big misconception, I think, with this whole, like, what makes up the 1% and – you know, I think everybody wants to be in the 1%, right? Who wouldn't want to be? But the issue is like, at what cost are we now making so much money? I think that, you know, there are a lot of people out there that have had the experience because now they don't have a job, or have the experience where they work for some boss that makes, you know, I don't know, makes 20 times what they make, you know, in a month, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so at what cost are we making that money? And right now, there's a lot of money in this country being made openly, okay? And what it's doing is it's crushing the middle class. It's killing the middle class. It's pushing people into poverty. And it's time for this kind of stuff to stop, because at the end of the day, you know, government was put there to work for the 99%. That's as, you know, democratic as you can get about it.
You mean government of and by and for the people?
Exactly. You know, things, so, you know, we can go back and see that Abraham Lincoln and, you know, George Washington and John Adams, they all had visions of this, right? This is the only way that it was going to work. They understood that the system they had in place at that time wasn't perfect, but that we should continue as a society to work towards a more perfect system. And it seems like we're moving backwards, and I know that's really, you know, philosophical, but I think at the end of the day, that's what it's about, right? You know, right now it's hard to make decisions and have the freedom to make decisions about your family and your home life and your career when you don't even really have a good job. And, you know, you just can't live like that forever.
Well, Miami has been notorious for years with a really, really poor income distribution and just horrible wages by and large, and it's gotten worse over the decades, it seems, rather than better. Do you see any action on behalf of the county government with this almost a year's pressure now to do something for more than just the 1% who they tend to typically serve? Do you see any progress at the governmental level? I mean, in terms of housing or health care or even schools for that matter?
You know, I think there's some instances, Richard, and sometimes they're a little discouraging because they seem kind of few, but the fact of the matter is that the dialogue has changed in this country. A few years ago, we were just worried about how are we going to reduce the deficit and the economy. Now we're worried about how we're going to put people – now we should be worried about people, and we're starting to hear more about it, people getting back to work, having money themselves so they can go out and stimulate the economy themselves and pay taxes into the government, which is more revenue. And, I mean, you know, and they have a say over their life, and they know that they're going to have decent health care. And so, you know, tomorrow in downtown Miami at Bayfront Park, right there, the Challenger Memorial, there's an SEIU local that's having a bit of a rally. They have some employees that, you know, have a very credible issue dealing with wage theft. And you're talking about janitors that in some instances make, you know, just around $8,000 a year. Okay? And so then the company doesn't even want to pay them overtime when they work in some cases, right? Or pay them what they deserve. And so they already get paid, you know, I mean, that's not a lot of money. I mean, how do you live in Miami making that kind of money? And then on top of that, you're not going to get fairly paid for all the hours that you worked. So, you know, I think a positive sign is that Mayor Tomas Segalado, mayor of the city of Miami, is going to be part of that rally tomorrow. And I think he understands the strife that's going on. I think he sees the ridiculousness and the perversion of having something like the Marlins Stadium right there in Little Havana, where now buildings are becoming vacant and they're being stripped of their walls. And, you know, somebody owns them and they'll get turned into a strip mall, and now you're pushing people out of their homes. And the reason why they live there is usually because they have no other choice, right? That's where people find low rent. And so now they're closing that out. And I think that when I think the dialogue is changing a bit. I think you've seen some people pretty upset about things like the Marlins Stadium and what's going on at Jackson Hospital, where now they just got through laying off 1,100 workers. So now on top of cutting, some of their services and programs, some of their community clinics, you know, now they've also laid off 1,000 people, and they want to sit there and tell everyone that it's not going to affect their access and service. And that's just not a true statement. Of course, it's going to have an impact.
Well, let me ask you this, if I may, Jose. It seems like it's been a couple of years now. Isn't it about time for Miami to build a stadium?
To build another stadium. You know, I mean, that's just, you know, I just think that that's one of the things there where people look at the city of Miami, and as proud as I am, you know, to live here in Miami. I live in the heart of Little Havana. It's my favorite, you know, I've been
such
in different places in the world, and this spot is home. This is where I love to spend my time, in a house that my grandparents, first purchased in the late 1960s after coming from Cuba. I mean, you know, it's home. It represents a lot. And, you know, I think that Miami is slowly changing. I think that there's an opportunity in the upcoming elections to put some county commissioners in place that are really going to work for the 99%. And so, you know, we're ready to stand behind the candidates that are willing to take up the agenda of the 99%. And I think the change has to start at the local level first and move its way up. And seeing that Mayor Regalado is going to take the time to go out to that event downtown to stand with these janitors and say, this isn't right, this has to change, I think is a positive sign.
Yeah, a step in the right direction for sure. You know, another thing I thought was interesting about the work that you're doing with One Miami is, you know, a lot of times beyond the Cokes, most people tend to, when they think of the 1%, it's a pretty faceless group, although the Mitt face is getting pretty strong. But I think one of the things you've done very powerfully and very effectively is put a face on it for the Miami 1%. You really called out Mickey Aronson and
sure.
the Carnival Miami. Why don't you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. I mean, one of the things that we did, and they've happened around the country, it's not just in Miami, but groups of citizens have started targeting shareholder meetings. And they'll go and they'll purchase one share so that they can attend the shareholders meeting, and they'll get together and they'll go in there and they'll make their voice heard about how we think that these people and these giant corporations need to pay their fair share in taxes, because at the end of the day, the situation is not great in this country, and we've definitely paid enough. And you know, they've just sat there and made money during this whole time. So it's time that they, you know, it's not that it's bad that they're making money. No one would care how much money they made. If they were paying their fair share and contributing, that's all anybody's asking for. And so we hit the Carnival shareholder meeting with about 30, 35 people. They shut down the webcast. They, you know, really got Mickey Harrison upset. 2 days before, we had a flotilla go out to his, you know, to his 150-foot yacht, and we protested him on his yacht that he should also pay his fair share. You know, his father tried to renounce citizenship just to get around, you know, thinking he could get around some taxes, which didn't end up working for him at the end. But, you know, those kind of things, I mean, it's just, why do you, you know, you've got a 150-foot yacht, a 200-foot yacht, and I'm not saying you don't deserve them, but you should give back a little bit more than you do.
Well,
at the money you spent on athletes.
You know, I think you make an excellent point, because you're essentially saying, you know, this is not about saying that somebody shouldn't be rich. You don't really have a problem with that. But what you do have a problem with, and what America is increasingly coming to grips with, is that these people have used, they've gamed the system, and what they couldn't openly outright just grab, they've arranged the laws to provide. You know, by incorporating this in Panama, by flagging these ships as Panamanian, you know, they're not searching for customers in Panama. They're not launching ship cruises out of Panama. No, these cruises are, if you will, serving customers in the Miami, in the Florida area, and in American tourists. But they have gamed the system so that they can keep their taxes down, keep their costs down, by, you know, incorporating in Panama and having these ships with Panama flags. You know, there, at some point, we have to say to these people, Mitt, you can't keep your money in Bahamas and call yourself a patriotic American. You can't have your company incorporated in Panama for a tax loss and allow yourself to make extra millions of dollars that you're not contributing, although you use the port resources, you use the road resources. You know, they're just not participating, and at some point that's going to be decried. And whether you want to call it unpatriotic or un-American or just not doing fair, equitable business the American way, these people have to be called out on it, and I think you've done a marvelous job with that. Talk to us about the future plans. What's on the agenda for the summer?
Well, I think we're going to, you know, really take up this campaign citywide of, creating some chaos for the banks, letting them know that, you know, we're tired of it, right? I mean, I think it was J.P. Morgan Chase, was it, had, you know, $2 billion to just burn, and nobody should really be concerned, according to them, right? So, you know, we're going to make some noise around the banks. We think it's ridiculous that they're kicking people out of their homes. No, you know, I mean, it's just, the properties they maintain look horrible in our city. They're you know, in low-income neighborhoods, they absolutely don't take care of them. I live next to a lot where they, you know, we have to complain for 3 or 4 months before they come mow the lawn, and it's an empty lot. You know, so those are the kind of things we're going to be focusing on. I think we're going to be focusing on some elected officials as well. The elections are coming up. As you know, we've had a pretty I think we've had a pretty successful campaign around Marco Rubio. We've conducted 2 sit-ins in Washington, D.C. We were able to meet with the senator. You know, when we met with him, he mentioned some things that, you know, sounded good. But, you know, I think he just has a very unrealistic view. And one of our members pointed that out to him when she was telling him that she lost her house. And she's a activist in Liberty City, Angela Samuels, and said that you know, that she had a chicken and rib business just to make ends meet, and that he said, well, you should turn that into a small business and franchise it, and, you know, you'll become, you know, a millionaire too, and then you'll be, you know, everything will be good. And she,
yeah, straw from gold.
Looked at, yeah, and so she told him, she said, Senator Rubio, next time you're in town, why don't you come over, because you mentioned how much you like ribs. And she said, and, you know, invest money and pull in my permits and franchising me, and I'll make you part owner. And, you know, of course, everybody stopped and laughed, but there was a lot of truth behind what she said.
Of course.
That's the problem. Nobody can go pull a permit, and nobody can go get a small business loan, you know, and have a sustainable business that's their own. And at the end of the day, this country was built on small businesses, and small businesses should continue to be the backbone.
Absolutely. That's great. I was wondering if you could tell me, do you see One Miami participating at the Republican convention in the Tampa area?
You know, we're planning on it. Wouldn't be right if we didn't, I think, quite honestly, right? I mean,
absolutely.
You know, I mean, we've called fair, we're fair. We've called out, you know, Senator Nelson as well when he supported Carnival Cruise Line on the Senate floor with Marco Rubio when Senator Rockefeller laid into him a little bit, or the cruise industry in general down here in Florida. And, you know, we've called him out too. I mean, we really want candidates on both sides to start, don't care really what side you come from, as long as you're doing the right thing and working for the people.
Well, I think there's an increasing awareness that people are fed up with either party. Either the quote major unquote parties, and the thing is, we're looking for solutions. We're not looking to blame anybody. We're not looking to cast out the rich. But what we do want them is to participate fairly. And you know, if it takes one of their own, Warren Buffett, to tell the terrible truth, it's just not fair that bosses are making millions of dollars and their secretaries are paying more tax than them. There's just a simple fairness. And there were experiments done a few years ago. You know, even dogs know what's fair. And obviously these people have not evolved to the point where they're capable of canine-level reasoning. So it's a real challenge. Jose, I want to thank you so much for joining us. Is there any other final message you want to leave? How can people who want to support One Miami, how can they get in touch with you?
I think the best way, Richard, is that, you know, they go onto our website at www.onemiaminow.org. That's onemiaminow.org. They can see what they're up to. We have a blog there. We have some emails that we can keep them up to date with. There are phone numbers there, our videos, our stories, and they can stay in tune with that. And just come out and support us, because it's going to be a long, hard struggle. But, you know, as we unite under one voice, right, a voice united, you know, can't be defeated. And I think that's what we need to do as a community.
Solidarity, brother. Thank you so much for talking to us.
All right, thanks. Have a good night, Richard.
You too, buddy. Bye-bye. Okay, well, that was Jose Suarez of One Miami. Giving us the update of what's going on down in Miami with Miami's work to address the issues raised by the 1%, whether it be on the homeless front, whether it be on the foreclosure front, and to try to get these businesses to pay their fair share. So that's a bit of good news from Jose Suarez. A couple of other things I want to mention while we've got a break here. I want to thank our good friends and fellow progressive broadcasters, Gwen Holden Berry, Amy Tidd, Susan Nylon, Brian Stetton, Anita Stewart. Make sure you participate and listen to these people's shows. There's good work coming out of all these progressive broadcasters. Tune in, let them know you heard about it on Progressive News Network. Ladies and gentlemen, I think I have my next guest, Miss Ellis Robinson. Welcome, Miss Robinson.
Hi,
how
Richard.
Are you tonight? Very good.
I'm great. Good. And happy Mother's Day to all those mothers out there listening.
Oh, thanks. And happy Mother's Day to you as well. So tell us a little bit about Ruth's List.
Great. Well, thank you very much for having me on your program. Ruth's List Florida was founded about 4 years ago by Emily's List, which is a similar organization that works at the federal level, and Alex Sink, and a number of other leading women, Democratic women around the state, as a way to encourage and promote electing Democratic progressive women to state and local office. What we know about women is that they need to be asked to run. When you ask a man, and whoever does these kinds of polls, and it's not my polling, it's legitimate polling from other places, but when you ask a man, have you ever thought of running for office, about 80% of men will say yes. But when you ask women, have you ever thought of running for office, only about 20% will say yes. Women tend to hold elected officials and the job that elected officials do to a higher standard and feel as though they don't necessarily fit or that it isn't fitting their lifestyle. And one of the and what Ruth's List is all about is helping women all walks of life see that there is a path to leadership for them through elected office. Ruth's List is named for Ruth Bryan Owen, who was the first congresswoman elected from the South. And she was elected in 1928. It's appropriate to honor her today on Mother's Day. She was a widow with four children when she was elected. And to be elected for her campaign, she drove her district in 1928, and her district went from the Florida Keys, she lived in Miami, all the way to the Georgia border.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. So if you can imagine, this was a woman with some determination. At that time,
I was going to say, back then, the roads alone were an adventure.
Exactly, exactly. And there's some great pictures on our website of her and her team on there. Spirit of Florida was what they called their campaign vehicle. And they learned to change tires and the whole bit as she campaigned. But at that time, Florida only had two congressional districts in the state. She
Wow.
went on to become the first woman ambassador. She was ambassador to Denmark. And
Mm-hmm.
then she befriended the Roosevelts during their campaign, working on their campaign, and she was appointed by President Roosevelt as an alternate to the United Nations and helped craft the documents that set up the United Nations.
Wow, that's super. I had no idea that there was this much history.
Yeah, so she, you know, when we think about what an impact women can have both on their communities, on the state, on the national level, and even internationally, Ruth Bryan Owen is a great example of that.
Wow, that's super. I pride myself on knowing history pretty well, and that's a all new terrain for me. Well, thank you so much for bringing us that information. You know, I always ask my guests, before I let them talk about the work that they're doing, I ask them to tell us a little bit about themselves, and what was your evolutionary kicker that took you from being just another fine young woman to a woman who was involved actively in trying to make this a better world. Could you talk about yourself a little bit?
Well, thank you very much. Well, it's appropriate. I've been, you know, as I'm sure others have been thinking about today on Mother's Day, is what are the gifts that we get from all of the different mothers in our lives? And so many of us have had blood mothers and mothers-in-law and stepmothers and grandmothers and all those kinds of things. And my grandmother, on my dad's side, was an activist herself, and she co-founded the League of Women Voters in Ohio.
Wow.
And was very active politically, and actually was carted off in a civil disobedience strike.
Oh my gosh!
Against the Vietnam War. When
wow.
she was working in Hawaii in her 70s. Now, today, being in her 70s didn't sound like very much, but 40
sure.
years ago, that was, you know, that was quite a thing. So
you
gave
must
us
have
all
been a little
ERA
young
bracelets. I'm sorry?
So you were just a little girl hearing about Grandma opposing the war. That must have been really a big impression.
Yes, it was. And she sent us all ERA bracelets when the ERA was first out there and made its rounds, although Florida still hasn't approved the Equal Rights Amendment. So that was really a big impression. And then my own mother was quite a volunteer and brilliantly organized. So those are two of the things that really had a lot to do with that. So, and then, like in some ways, like Ruth Bryan Owen, who actually was William Jennings Bryan's daughter.
Really?
He started to do his communications, his letters, and take care of his mail and things like that when she was 12.
My goodness.
And so she was indoctrinated, if you will, and brought into the political fold very early. She also was just a real inspiration in the sense of a lot of things that opened up to her happened because she got involved in a campaign. She saw a candidate out there that she admired, in this case President Roosevelt, then she worked on that campaign and became visible in the campaign and was seen as somebody who had a lot of talent and was taken forward from there. So it really can happen, and in my case, I was really fortunate to be one of the first people involved in Alex Sink's chief financial officer campaign, and living in Southwest Florida, as I do, that's sort of been a black hole for progressives and Democrats for a long time. Or maybe I should say a red hole, if you will. So it's kind of like...
allow that kind of thing.
Right. So coming out of having anybody with any enthusiasm coming out of Southwest Florida was so uncommon that... and we brought out a lot more votes than anyone expected, and so that gave me a chance to get to know Alex. And when she said... I've always wanted to do this, and I'd like you to do it. I was very honored to have her make that invitation.
Well, let me ask you this. Before you got involved in that campaign, were you politically engaged in high school, in college? You have such great roots in political activism.
Well, I have been involved in advocacy almost all my life. So I've worked with... in groups that have been promoting progressive causes, mostly, though, in the nonprofit community rather than in politics. Other than addressing envelopes for my neighbor's judge campaign when I was 8 years old, I think that was about the extent until recently. But, we're very lucky in that even though there aren't a lot of Democrats in Southwest Florida, we're very well organized and we work hard. And so there are opportunities, once again, to kind of get a chance. You know, it's one of those things that if you raise your hand and show up, I guess that's Woody Allen. 80% of success is just showing up. That really makes a difference. And I would encourage anybody that if you're thinking about running for office, the best way to figure out, is this for me, or to get an insight into it, is to find a candidate that you like. Candidates are always looking for help, and the Obama campaign, of course, is getting a lot of attention, the Nelson campaign, but there are so many local campaigns that also need help, and sometimes you can be much more visible with those campaigns than you can later on. So it's a great opportunity and a great time to be involved.
Well, you know, many of us have realized that politics isn't a quadrennial sport, that we have to be involved, we have to be participating every day, every year. You just can't wait for the presidential cycle to jump back in the bandwagon and suddenly try to do something. And, of course, with the importance of Congress, whether it be to support a Democratic president or to drag a wildly radical Republican legislature like we have in Tallahassee back from the brink of the latest folly. It's so important to get those local people, the county level, the state representative type positions filled with something like progressive Democrats. So I really salute the work that you're doing. Tell us, who are you working with right now, if you know, as much as you can? Tell us some of the candidates you're supporting right now.
Well, if you don't mind, let me give you a little bit, or your listeners, a little bit more background, because we are so used to saying, to being frustrated, especially as progressives, to being frustrated by, oh gosh, you know, it doesn't matter what I do, we've got these terrible people in the legislature, and we have had terrible people in the legislature, but what's happening in 2012 is really a success story we can all be proud of. And I know that, well, actually starting 4 years ago, but with the election 2 years ago, we were all thrilled with the passage of the Fair Districts Florida amendments, which set guidelines for drawing the districts in the redistricting year, which is this year. As a result of that, the state house actually did a pretty decent job of drawing their districts. I mean, there are still some things that are more gerrymandered than we would like, but prior to this year, for the last two decades, it has been almost impossible for Democrats to get more than a third of the seats in the House or the Senate. Now, that meant that we couldn't couldn't stop overturning a veto, we couldn't stop putting some of these really bad constitutional amendments on the ballot, and of course when it came just down to budget votes and things like that, Democrats have had no power. Well, and since it's been so long, many people who are rising stars and have said they want to be in public service and they want to be in an elected office have said, well, clearly, though, if I'm going to do that on a progressive front, I'm not going to do it through the legislature because there just aren't any opportunities. So what has happened is that instead, with the redistricting, we now have 56 seats in the state house that are competitive.
Well, that's an improvement.
Yeah. So when we think that there are 120 seats in the house, we currently hold 39, which is less than a third, and actually 38 because we lost one because of foolishness, but now we have the opportunity to hold 56, and those are 56 where the numbers are decent. We always have some flukes where a Democrat can win a district without great numbers because she or he fits that district. So it's certainly an opportunity for us to have hugely more influence in the legislature, especially a state house, than we've had in the past. Our big challenge is finding candidates. For the last 10 years ago when they did redistricting, they actually didn't know what the maps were going to be until June. So everyone expected that to happen this year, and instead we found out what the maps were in March, and that meant that we had an opportunity to really influence by recruiting candidates and things like that. So right now, Ruth's List is involved in recruiting candidates for districts that are winnable and still need an electable candidate in them. We're supporting our incumbents because we have some great women who are there already. You probably have already talked to your listeners about the champions of the middle class and the awards that have been given for the last 2 years, and we were very proud that although Democratic women are only 11% of the state legislature, when you count both the House and the Senate. That last year, when the awards were first given, and they were presented by Progress Florida and a coalition of groups, including Roots List, when they were first given, we were thrilled that out of the 21 that were given, seven of those were Democratic progressive women. So even though they were only 11% of the members of the legislature, they were a third of the representation. Well, this year the numbers got even better, and we topped that list with more than with almost 40% of those recognized being Democratic progressive women. So clearly, if we elect them, they will vote the right way. And so from a progressive standpoint, the more Democratic women we can get in office, the better off we'll be on all of the issues we care about. So you asked about some candidates that we're watching right now. I will say there are candidates who've been identified, candidates who have stepped forward, incumbents, as I mentioned, and also some candidates we've directly recruited. So I would say we're actually having an event on Thursday, the 17th, in Orlando at Taste Restaurant, and you can go to our website and register, and our website is Ruth's List FL, so no apostrophe, just Ruth's List FL.org, and sign up. It's only $10 to come, but we will be honoring and having a chance to speak with the Honorable State House Member Geraldine Thompson, who is running for State Senate. Also, Karen Castor Dental, who is running for State House, and you may have caught that Castor in there. She is actually Betty Castor's other daughter and Kathy Castor's sister, Congresswoman Kathy Castor's sister. And then also Shannon Curry, who is running for State House, and then Gina Duncan, who is running for County Commission.
Wow, that's great.
So that's in the Orlando area.
Super. What do you see as obviously identifying candidates is the item on the agenda? So you feel pretty good about this coming election?
I feel we have a better chance of picking up seats than we have had in a really long time. And we're in a catch-22 situation, if you will. The wonderful thing is that thanks to the work that the presidential campaign is doing, thanks to the work that the coordinated campaign, particularly with Senator Nelson and the congressional candidates, is doing, those things that are all happening there, that means that we will have more voters out than ever in the past. And the more voters who come out, the more likely the vote is to go Democratic. The challenge is that there will be an inordinate amount of noise, if you will, or claim on brain space for the electorate. People are going to be bombarded with information about the presidential race, particularly about the senatorial race, about the congressional race, and frankly, most of us don't even know who our state legislators are. And then you ask us who our county commissioners are, or our clerk of courts, or our city council members, and that even gets harder and harder. And yet, those down-ballot races have more direct effect on the quality of our life than the top of the ticket in so many different ways. So your very good question of am I hopeful? I'm very hopeful, but it is going to take a lot of help to direct assistance to candidates. We have a lot of new candidates running who have never run for office before. And, for example, on Friday I spent a day with two candidates in Southeast Florida, Evelyn Garcia, who is running for House District 88, a brilliant and talented Haitian American who is running for that seat, and then also Jerry Ann Capitosta, who is running against Moriaitis in House District 93. And Moriaitis is a Tea Party candidate. Again, that will be a tougher race. It's pretty evenly split as far as Democrats and Republicans, I mean, the Democratic expected vote. But she will need money, and she will need volunteers, and she will need time to get the attention that she needs. Oftentimes people ask, well, why do candidates need money? And particularly this year, the way that a candidate will get their name and platform and information to a voter is going to be through the mail. Certainly candidates are going to try to knock on your door, and they're going to phone you if they can, and you're going to see them at events. But the one way they can be sure that you're actually going to see their face and know something about them is to reach you through the mail. And that's expensive. And everybody's going to be mailing this year, and to try to get the attention that is needed to actually help somebody know a candidate is really going to be costing money. And it costs more money when there's so many people competing for attention.
It seems to me that one of the other things that Democrats in Florida are going to be up against this year is that with the convention, Republican convention located in Florida, and Florida being seen as very much a toss-up state, it would seem to be there's going to be a lot of Republican money, a lot of Republicans traveling around, a lot of drum beating, and that's a lot of national attention against what resources we progressives can bring to bear in the situation. That's going to make it more difficult. On the other hand, given the rather curious nature of the Republican platform, if you want to call it that,
right?
They may be their own worst enemies, and long may they wave. But do you see that presence, the Republicans, the elevation of Florida to a national battleground, do you see that as a problem for us or as a boon?
I think you're absolutely right that it's a mixed blessing. But what we are going to see is that Republicans are not going to give an inch easily. They are going to spend a lot of money to keep their incumbents in office, even in those districts where they don't have an edge anymore. And that means, frankly, that they're probably going to go negative. There will be a lot of negative campaigning out there. There will be a lot of smear tactics. And those are difficult to anticipate and difficult to respond to. Which is, again, another reason why candidates need money and need support. We can say all we want, it's terrible how much money is in elections these days, but the only way that we can change policy effectively is to change the policy makers. We can, you know, think of how many organizations and how many progressives have spent hours and hours and hours calling their legislators and going to Tallahassee and knocking on doors and sending letters to the editor and all that kind of stuff, which basically have fallen on deaf ears because they don't need to listen to us. We are out of power in Tallahassee. We can become a power. We can change the face of power in Tallahassee, and Ruthless is working very hard to make that happen. We are a membership organization, by the way, and our members are our eyes and ears in their community. When we, I mentioned the Southeast Florida, some of the candidates that we have there. We also have four others that we're working with, at least. We're active in the Tampa Bay area, and then we also have candidates that are in other districts around the state. But our members help us find candidates. They're our eyes and ears in the community. They also are those folks who can assist candidates and help them win, whether it's through a contribution or it's making phone calls, or if the candidate is in your area to do some get out the vote, knocking on doors, things like that. So with the technology that's available today, anybody can help a candidate win, even if they can't vote for them directly. And that's part of what Ruthless does, is we recommend candidates to you that we are confident have what it takes to win. And frankly, it's not every candidate. Whether the numbers are against her or the district's against her or there's a very strong incumbent, but we'll bring you candidates that we know can win with your help. And that's what we need, is to build our network and to bring more women and men into the fold as members to join us and help support these great women we have out there running.
Well, I'm one of those people that doesn't quite understand how we've managed to let the women's pay equity battle go unresolved yet. And, you know, as you mentioned, this benighted state hasn't passed ERA yet. I can't help but have the impression that too often we have let the Republicans who've been in power in Florida for too long sort of set the agenda, frame the issues, deliver the legislation. And granted, you know, I realize we're outnumbered. We really don't have an active participating vote in the legislature. But where you don't have that, what we do have left to us is the bully pulpit. And I wonder, do you think it's time for a more active kind of, you know, truth squatting, if you will, the Republican legislature? You know, we've seen a continued escalation. Once it was just they tried to make access to abortion difficult. Now we see calls to make contraception difficult. You know, since they constantly up the ante, where are they headed next? It boggles the mind. So I'm wondering, isn't it time that we start having people regularly call out the legislature? If you can't do it in the legislature itself, maybe we need to have, you know, an office in Tallahassee that constantly says, look what they're saying, look what they're doing, look what they're saying, look what they're doing. Now, it may very well be that with the level of mischief going on, and it's such a nice way of putting it, at the Scott House in Tallahassee, they may all be indicted and can't run next time. But do you think there's a place for a more activist reaction to these Republican running wild in Tallahassee?
Absolutely, and I'm glad you brought that up. There actually are two organizations particularly that are doing great work on that. One is Progress Florida, and if someone wants to keep attuned to all of the issues that are going on around Florida, Progress Florida has a super daily clips program that goes from Monday through Friday, where they review all of the state's newspapers and other media outlets and compile that into a morning update of what's going on in progressive issues around the state. But they also are bringing attention to so many of these issues, and they sort of launched the Awake the State program that started about a year ago now. And then also
the uterus
Florida
program.
Watch. Yes, well, and yes, Florida Watch Action is another great organization that is working out there. Scott Randolph, who is such a star, a progressive star, who who came across the uterus issue, and we of the Uterati, Susanna Randolph, who is the executive director of Florida Watch Action. Before Florida Watch Action was there, she was and remains a advisory council member of Ruthless Florida as well.
Well, thank you so much.
I think you're right. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I really appreciate the excellent work that you're doing. Without your energy and support, there's no way we're going to get the progressive women in the legislature that we need. Thank you so much. You want to tell our listeners how to get in touch with you or how to support?
Great. Well, absolutely, and thank you. It's been a delight to speak with you and to help get that word out. You can reach us and join us and find out more about us at our website, which is Ruth's List, RUTHSLISTFL, as in Florida, .org, O-R-G, or call 239-472-9159.
Well, thank you so much, Ellis. You're doing such great work. We salute you, and if you ever want to make another announcement or have some news for us, please don't hesitate. Give us a call or drop us an email. You'll be on, okay?
Thank you so much. It's really great to have this opportunity.
Okay.
Take good care.
And happy Mother's Day.
Bye-bye. You too.
Thanks. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to bring on Mike Fox from Progressive Democrats of America. Mike, welcome.
Salutations, brother.
How you doing tonight?
I'm so fine I can hardly stand myself, and may I start by saying I am in 100% solidarity with Ruth's List. They absolutely rock, and personally, I do not work for a female candidate who does not have their endorsement, period.
Well, that's great. We know we support them, and we want everyone who can to give them support, either with your phone numbers, with your calls, or with your dollars. Mike, you've got a campaign going on now to get Mr. Solomon elected. Tell us about it. You need help.
Indeed, my brother. The best way to describe Norman Solomon is think Bernie Sanders with Alan Grayson's attitude. Bottom line, we're talking a phenomenal progressive who is going to go to Washington and make some serious noise. He isn't about cozying up and making friends by any stretch. Right now, he's running in California's 2nd District, which was held by Lynn Woolsey, currently is held by Lynn Woolsey, but she's standing down. Lynn, of course, is one of the founding members of the Progressive Caucus, and it would be a terrible loss if we lose that seat in the caucus. Norman's election is on June 5th. Vote by mail ballots are in people's hands right now. We are making telephone calls in solidarity from all over the country into his district to ensure that he makes it through this primary. It's an open primary where Republicans vote as well. So as a result, there is a corporatist Democrat who is in the lead as we speak, and there's another even worse one behind him who actually is literally a blonde version of Sarah Palin with a D next to her name. And she has a boatload of corporate money coming in. So it's going to be our efforts nationwide that are going to make this difference. And the dispos right now that we see are amazing. In a race where we have 7 different potential legitimate candidates, if we talk to the voter and
you got about a minute, buddy. Give me your contact
information. All right, thank you. Thank you for the heads up. I'll wrap it. If we talk to them, he wins, bottom line. So here's what we're asking. If you have any hours whatsoever and would care to promote a candidate of this ilk, send an email to Mike Fox, MikeFox, at pdamerica.org. That's pdamerica.org. Check out that website as well. Norman's website is www.solomon4congress.com if you want more information about him. But bottom line, get on board with the phone bank. And as the reason why I do it, I'm in Bill Young's district, the single longest tenured Republican in the House of Representatives. This is a way that while you may not be able to vote for Norman, Norman can vote for you. So get on board. I'm done.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks a lot. That's Mike Fox, West Coast PDA. Make sure you help him out. If you can make any phone calls, give him some help. Thanks a lot, friends. And also Ruth List, don't forget, you can support them. They need your help. They need your support. You got a penny, you got a dollar, you got a five, send it to them. They need help getting the good work about progressive women in Florida. God knows we need them in Tallahassee. more than we need another wave of BP oil. Thanks a lot. See you next week. Rick Spezak, news director of Progressive News Network, on behalf of myself and Mickey Royce of the Media Goddess, thanks so much. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye. Okay, boom.